The August Wilson Red Door Project is a nonprofit based in Portland, Oregon, founded in 2011. The Red Door's mission is to change the racial ecology through the arts. Well, what the hell does that mean? Most people, when they hear our mission, focus on this word. We want to shift our collective focus to this word, to what we mean by it, and why it's so important to us. Because when we talk about race in this society, we almost inevitably and immediately create a schism, a polarized model where you're on one side or the other, a violent play of opposites. And once we're in this model, this mindset, we are trapped in opposition, and there's no way out. This is the absence of conversation, the absence of learning, the negation of our humanity, and this is the level of discourse in our society right now. A model that is rigid and fixed, where crossing that boundary feels impossible. So if we're going to survive, we need a different model. One that shifts us out of the play of opposites and into something shared. Ecology is the interaction of differences to create mutual benefit, a model where everything and everyone has a place. So ecology is a model where our differences are the very thing that lead us to wholeness. So the best way to change our ecology is to bring more difference into the spotlight. How do we do that? All living things, people, animals, plants, viruses, even ourselves, everything that's alive does the same three things. Our first order of business in life is to stay alive, to stay safe. So we fight and defend ourselves from invasion, from harm, from danger. And when we talk about race, it tends to be on this level, the level of reinforcement, defensiveness, pain, anger, and shame. So all life is driven to protect itself. But then something happens that pushes us out of our comfort zone, what we think we know, what we believe we are capable of, and suddenly our reality becomes bigger. With willingness and vulnerability, we take in new experiences. And this shift into a larger sense of ourselves and reality changes us forever. We integrate this growth and we become something new, something different than what we were before. Protect, expand, evolve. All living organisms do these three things. And because it's a cycle, the question becomes, how do we keep moving? What happens in between that propels us from one state to the next? Here is our answer. Art is the transformational agent that moves us from one state into another. Art is how we change our ecology. In 2016, we put this philosophy to work. The Red Door took on one of the most important and difficult issues facing our society, police profiling of black men and women in America. We brought New Black Fests, Hands Up, to Portland. Seven monologues by seven black playwrights documenting their personal experiences with profiling. Stories of fear and anger, strength and survival. Stories that personalize rather than politicize. Through art, we asked audiences to stand in the shoes, hear the voices, and witness the truths of seven human beings. And for a few hours, we dissolved that hard boundary we all feel trapped behind. Hands Up opened the door to a profound connection with members of the Portland Police Bureau. After going through some tactical trainings with the police to give us a glimpse of a day in their lives, we were invited to perform Hands Up for police officers at their training facility. We listened to stories that were new to us, and we knew we wanted to put those truths on the stage. So we're creating a show called Cop Out that mirrors the format of Hands Up, a series of monologues written in collaboration with police officers that give voice to the experiences of men and women in law enforcement. Hands Up and Cop Out offer us the chance to leave our zones of protection and expand. They create a safe space to hear and share stories that invite us deeply into another person's lived experience. And we hope presenting these stories will change our racial ecology by shining a light on the power of differences. Not to divide us, not to define us, but to awaken us, to connect us, to challenge us, and to change us. So our mission isn't a feel-good exercise. It is a call to all of us to come shift together. So we thank you deeply for your presence, for your willingness, and for your support. Now, let's open the red door and evolve together. Thank you.
So here we are, all together, on this beautiful Sunday morning, ready to hear what it's like for law enforcement in today's climate, today's environment. And as I'm reading for this morning, I would like to share a poem by Kim Stafford called Hard Talk. What if understanding is a light we glimpse beyond the thorny thicket of difficult conversations? What if polite gossip won't get us there, and even civil discourse keeps us trapped in our old meadow of safety and ignorance? What if it takes a few bruises and scratches to reach the light? What if you and I need to wade in together, talking recklessly, not silent, not shouting, but fierce in listening, saying, "How is it for you? Tell me more about that. I want to know what I never knew. I need your suffering to erase my denial and my pain to illuminate your path. Ready? We begin." And so we do begin. Let's have a warm welcome for Kevin Jones, Leslie Moniz, and Deputy Chief Robert Day.
So as Salima said, I am Leslie Moniz, and along with Kevin Jones, we are the co-founders of the Red Door Project. And this is Deputy Police Day, Robert Day, who is a close friend and colleague. And we have been through a journey together that we want to share with you. Obviously, it's going to be so, you know, in 30 minutes, we'll probably be able to get like a 10,000-foot view, but we wanted to give you a sense of our work together, how our thinking has evolved, the personal transformation that we've all had to go through, and one way that we sort of have figured out or we're experimenting with that's a way to talk to people about that is that I'm going to interview the two of them so you can kind of get a sense of how things have evolved for us collectively and personally. Make sense? You up for the conversation? All right, excellent.
Okay. Now you can.
Perfect.
Great, thank you. So I was just saying, we brought some notes so we stay on track.
And I'll interrupt them if they're not on track. So just to state the obvious, Kevin, you're a black man. And Bob, you're not. But rather, you are a white police officer. And that makes everything just potentially very interesting right from the start, right? You come up here, you're here, you take a look at these two, you think, huh, interesting. I wonder what kind of relationship that is. And we all have many projections and stories in our head about what that might be. So we're hoping to illuminate what this actual relationship has been like. And, yeah. you know, we want to, you know, talk to you about, I'm going to ask you both about your lived experience. Sounds ridiculous when I'm going to say it, but your lived experience of what it means growing up as a black man, which obviously is ridiculous to try to have you talk about in a couple of minutes. Because it's like the whole, you know, yeah. And I'm going to also talk to you about the experience of being a white guy and being a cop. So what I'm trying to get to here is really just get to the essence of something very foundational for both of them, so we can get a peek into kind of where they're coming from. So I'm going to start with you, Kevin, which is growing up for you and like into adulthood, into your formative years, what was it like for you as a black man as it relates to your relationship with the police?
So before I start, so I'm just aware that you're way over there, Bob.
Come close.
But it's not even that. It's the table is in the way, and so there's this kind of thing. And I don't like the polarization that happens. And I mean, this is the second time that Bob and I have actually gone public with our relationship.
The coming out party.
But we're out of the closet.
I felt a little nervous and sweating a little bit.
Yeah, that's why.
Nobody in the police bureau knows about this, so let's just keep it right.
Yeah. So it's important to, you know, you're privileged because you get a firsthand opportunity to see us go at this. So a little bit about me. So yeah, I mean, I tell the story of when I was 14 years old because it was my first introduction to police on a personal level. I was all set up to be a classical guitarist when I was 14 years old. I studied guitar in New York City, which is where I'm from. My teacher, who at 18 happened to be the accompanist for Harry Belafonte, and he took me to a concert at Carnegie Hall to see Andre Segovia. Anybody ever heard of Andre Segovia? Okay. Great, that's nice to hear. You know, older people, I feel you. Anyway, so I was blown away. You know, I left the concert. I had never seen anything like this. And we were driving back to Queens, which is where I'm from. And Leon, my teacher, who was 18, was driving a New Yorker, Chrysler New Yorker, brand new car, because he was wealthy. He was playing for Harry Belafonte. He was doing really great. So we're driving down Queens Boulevard, and I see two cars pull up next to us, an unmarked car, man sitting in the passenger seat, sort of slouched down in the window. And as soon as we took off from the light, the car swerved out in front of us and stopped us, pulled me out of the car, and threw me up against the hood of the car, and started to harass me, ask me questions, and talk to me in a way that I'd never been talked to before in my life. It was shocking, and that was my first experience with police officers. And during this time, it was in the 60s, drugs were on the upswing, heroin specifically, and along with that was crime. And so me being raised in a black community, I was being pulled over constantly by police officers my whole entire childhood. To the point where, we could go through all those stories, not all of them, but there are some really good ones that I won't share, but just to the point where my heart pounds whenever I think about police, whenever I see police, when I see the lights in my rearview mirror. And that was the ongoing story of my entire life till I was, you know, in my 60s. And never having a relationship with police officers. So that's kind of my history.
And just, you know, just because we have in our script, so I'm going to just add, no, you don't have to say it, but I'm just going to add it too, which is also having grown up in Jamaica, Queens, which at the time was a solidly middle-class black community. And so, it's kind of the contrast of that.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't know this, but I think back in the 50s and 60s, you know, there were pockets of communities within the United States, there aren't too many of them now, where black people thrive. And Jamaica, Queens was happened to be one of those communities. Artists who were in Harlem and Sugar Hill, people like Louis Armstrong, John Coltrane, Ella Fitzgerald, James Brown, Count Basie, Bud Powell, these are people who live in my neighborhood. These are people, doctors, lawyers, all black, teachers, professors. Only time I ever saw a white person was driving the bus or a police officer. It was the only time. So it was a big shock for me, and it was a rude awakening for me to recognize that all of a sudden I'm seen as, you know, the villain, so to speak.
Thank you. Great. And so, Bob, my question for you is actually two parts in a way. First, I guess, is just like, for you, how would you describe your kind of fundamental experiences related to race growing up? What was your...
It's probably say non-existent. I grew up, I'm a native Oregonian. I grew up out in the Oregon City area, actually a little suburb even of Oregon City called Redland. And grew up in a, you know, completely white environment. Didn't have any relationships with people of color, not totally unusual in this, you know, part of the country. But grew up in a strong home. My parents have been married 60 years, very family-oriented, taught to respect others, but never did the conversation of race enter the equation. It was as if it didn't exist, because it didn't exist in my world. I didn't consider it or think about it. Really just developing opinions and biases and prejudices based upon what I would take in through media or general conversation with peers or school or, you know, the usual suspects in that regard. So that really just kind of formed it. I ended up going to high school out in East County at David Douglas at the time, which was a large school, because the small community then didn't have a high school, so they would ironically bus us to other places, and there was a window of time where we were going to David Douglas. So that was a little bit of a shock to go from the small community to East County, but even East County in the 80s was still, you know, pretty much predominantly white. So even though I was in a larger school, metropolitan environment, I gravitated and hung out with young men and women that were white. There was a few black students. And the only issue or challenge or information I took in about race then that still sticks out in my mind is when Leslie asked me this question was, there were students in Laos and Vietnam and so forth, and you remember the term boat people that came over, you know, after the Vietnam War in the 70s and the 80s and so forth. And so that was always kind of out there, like, well, those people are kind of different or kind of weird or gangs or whatever. But, I mean, I really, all through my childhood and growing up, even into adulthood, was, you know, pretty much in this white world. And I didn't see, you know, I didn't see an issue with that or a problem with that. It didn't concern me. It was just, you know, going through life.
Thank you. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. So at some point you decided to become a police officer. So how would you describe your experience as a cop, but in particular, how you experienced yourself in your formative years as a police officer as it related to suddenly relating to the black community?
Well, I started law enforcement in 1988. I started police career in 1990. And confessions, for lack of a better term, or recognitions I'm necessarily proud of, but once again, I never really considered it to be an issue or a factor in how I did my job or how I viewed my role. In 1991, I was transferred to North Precinct, which was in North Portland, was predominantly African American and albina, and, you know, you still had Cleo Williams there on Williams, and, you know, it was then Union Avenue, it wasn't Martin Luther King, and I'd never been north of I-84 in my life. I mean, I'd never been to Lloyd Center, I didn't know where Emanuel Hospital was, just because there wasn't a need for it growing up south of Portland. I'm brought into this community, predominantly African-American community, in a lot of police contact for several years. But even then, at that point, really not considering there to be a problem or an issue. It was just sort of a job. You come to work, you do your job, you go home. It wasn't really until about 2006 when, you know, I started to maybe have a little bit of time of reflection.
What happened in 2006?
Well, by 2006, I had promoted, so I was an officer for 10 years, a sergeant for 6 years. 2006, I was a lieutenant, reassigned back to North Precinct, so I, you know, traveled around the city in various roles. And it was in that time when, you know, when you're a lieutenant, you're a shift lieutenant, you have sort of a greater scope of responsibility. So I had, you know, 30, 40 officers on a shift and half a dozen sergeants. And of course, you know, some of the officers were officers of color. You know, my mindset towards the job had changed a little bit. It was more managerial, more supervisory, less about, you know, kind of just go out and catch bad guys, which is the, you know, sort of what's ingrained in the officers at a young age. And so I began to look a little more holistically. I was in a position of management, so I was more in the community, and I was more, you know, attending community meetings. And so I just began to ask some questions. One particular officer at the time, who's still a good friend, Chuck LaBelle, is African-American. You know, he was willing to let his boss, you know, just kind of start to ask some questions. He actually gave me a book. It's a textbook. It was very dry, but it's called Courageous Conversations About Race. And that was the first thing I'd ever read. At that point, I'm, you know, what, 2006, I'm, you know, well into my 30s at that point, and I'm reading something about this thinking, man, I don't know. And then, of course, you know, began to evolve in my career and the topic in my career.
Great. Thank you. So that's helpful. So this is just sort of meant to sort of give you a sense of sort of like the ground that they stand on, where they both have come, Kevin and Bob both have come from. So I'd like to sort of bring it now to more present time. And, you know, Kevin, you're, like I said, you're the CEO and artistic director of the Red Door. And at some point, you decided to bring Hands Up. So that, like you saw before, the mission of the Red Door is to change the racial ecology of Portland through the arts. So at one moment, Kevin just saw Hands Up and decided to think about that as bringing that to Portland. So what inspired you to do that? What motivated you to bring Hands Up to Portland?
Yeah. Well, I should probably start by saying that when I first saw the script, I was not interested at first in presenting the stories because I thought that they were a little... a little whiny. Seven black people complaining about their situation. I think for a lot of people of color, not just African Americans, but, you know, we're conditioned to suppress those feelings of subjugation and hurt and move on. That's always the statement. Come on, move on. It's time to move on. Let it go. So I didn't want to play a part of that. But then as I read them, I realized that these were stories that were reflecting a diverse spectrum of African Americans in the community. But this was something that needed to be experienced. I'm sitting and listening to Bob tell the story now, every time I hear him talk about his life, I hear something and I learn something different and new. And it gives me more insight into who he is and where he's from and what he's trying to do. And I think that sometimes that doesn't happen often enough within the black community. I think that sometimes we are led by the stories that from the media that want to demonize black folks or say that the reason why they're being stopped by the police is because they're obviously up to no good. And I felt that there was a different story that needed to be told. And as it turned out, we presented the show and it was very successful. But the reason it was successful is because so many white people, for example, said, wow, I never knew that. I never thought about that. I never realized that that was going on. Which I did not really expect. I was like, come on. But then I realized it was true. And then for people of color, African Americans and others, when they heard it, it was like, thank you. I feel redeemed. You are reflecting my story publicly in a way where I don't have to. I feel like it's not just me. And so there was an incredible amount of healing that happened through that process.
Good, yeah. And how did you get hooked up with this guy?
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Yeah. So, you know, I, yeah. so, um, We're doing the show, and we're early on, and an audience member stood up and said, the police need to see this show. Now, granted, this show does not. Has anyone here seen Hands Up? Oh, okay, all right, that's nice. So, there should be more hands, by the way.
True, it's a Unitarian group.
Yeah, really, I'm surprised by that. And I was here last year, and I spoke about Hands Up, so you've got no excuse. But anyway, yeah, so shortly after presenting it, and it was, you know, it just took off. We did no advertising, no marketing. It was like the sixth show. Someone said, the police are coming. And I said, I doubt it. And she came to me after the show, and she said, I know a police officer, and I'm going to have him reach out to you. His name was Mike Krebs. He was the captain of the traffic division at the time. So Mike called me up and said, would you like to meet for coffee? Now, I didn't realize this, but Mike was really just wanting to size me up. He wanted to make sure I was, you know, not a Black Panther or something ready to shoot the police. But we had a great time. We talked for a couple of hours. And I said, so you're going to come to the show? He said, yeah. So he came. And he came in uniform. I said, you know, I'll leave it up to you. If you want to come in uniform, that's fine. If you want to come out of uniform, that's fine, too. He came out of uniform, and at the end of the show, he stood up and spoke and said, I'm a police officer, and this has been a very moving experience for me. The first monologue is about a performer, an artist, a teacher who was pulled out of the car, similar to my story, thrown on the ground, had a gun to his head. Mike said that I'm deeply moved. I've never thought about what it must feel like to have something like that happen to you, to be pulled out of the car. And not only that, but after the show, he reached out to the actor who performed that monologue, who he thought was actually the person who this actually happened to. The truth is that those kinds of things happen to him all the time, that particular actor. And he asked him to go out for coffee. So they went out for coffee, and they had an amazing experience. And from that, Mike said, you should talk to the captain of the training division. I'll set that up.
And that was Bob at the time.
That was Bob. Bob was the captain of the training division. So we went, you, me, and another employee from the police department, and Mike, all sat down in a conference room with Mike at the training division. And Mike introduced us, and Bob sat down. It was very cordial, very warm, and there was something about the way he even said what I'm going to say. I was touched by it because I felt it was very vulnerable and honest. He said, Kevin, I got to tell you that if you came here to point out to us how racist we are, you might as well turn around and walk out right now because we don't want to hear that. And I said to him, well, that's not what was on my mind. I want to hear your story. And you want me to start talking?
Yeah, you're going ahead of me. Yeah, okay. That's okay. No, but so basically you're saying that's how you met Bob, right? That's how we sort of went to the training division, Bob.
Yes.
And we started having a conversation. And then, Bob, you came to see Hands Up. And what motivated you to actually come to the show?
Well, it was August of 16, and what motivated me was my wife. I married up like most. I'd had this conversation. I came home and was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, my buddy Mike Krebs got this idea that I'm going to go to this show. Of course, there's no way I'm going to do that. I've been to enough events where I've been yelled at and told I'm a racist and told that I'm a horrible person and that the police do horrible things, and I know the story and the narrative, and I just don't have the time and the energy for it. And my beautiful bride, who has always had a heart for the marginalized and the disadvantaged, and fortunately is the more reasonable one, she's like, no, I think we're going, which is code for we're going. So I don't know if you've been in a situation where you're having a discussion with your significant other and you realize the decision's already been made. And you're just... So we went very reluctantly. I was really taken aback. I mean, the show was impressive. Now, I'm not an arts kind of guy. They may come as a surprise to you just looking at me. You don't find me in a lot of local theaters and all that kind of stuff. But I went, and we were at the Hollywood Theater in a very filled room. And you know, I was impressed by the acting. I was impressed by the stories. But there's still a bit of me that was sort of skeptical, like, yeah, I've heard this police profile and I've heard this. One of the things that my wife recognized in me going was, and I appreciated this, is she's like, you know, you're in a position of influence. You're in a position of authority in the police bureau. You have an opportunity to maybe have an impact on this conversation. And, you know, bless her for thinking outside the box, because I certainly wasn't. And so I went, and then what really struck me, though, was in the end of the show, the conversation that happened and after the show from audience members was very similar to what I was just seeing on stage. And there was a moment there where I'm like, wow, these are the people that we're serving. These are the people we're policing. And they're saying the same thing here in Portland. So I couldn't detach from that. You know, I couldn't just see the show and walk out and go, well, you know, that's a show. When I'm hearing these voices in a way, and by able to sort of sit, I did not identify myself. I did not get up like Mike Krebs and MPDs. I just sat and listened. But be able to sit and listen and be present was really very significant. And then, you know, as much as I wanted to argue that and push back against it, when I circled up back with Kevin and Leslie and sort of, you know, talked about some of the challenges and some of my frustrations, you know, their response was different. Their response was, in fact, the first people in law enforcement where I've been able to sit down, I say this not in an exaggeration, sit down and really say, these are the things I don't like, these are the things I was upset about, and their response was, tell us more about that. I mean, that's just a great way to live life, in my opinion. I mean, I could do that better in a lot of situations, but they, to them, to their credit, this isn't a great big moment for me, it was to their credit to say, you know, tell me more about that. Well, shoot, who doesn't like to tell their story? You know, so that really gave me the freedom and then kind of move us forward.
That's great. Yeah. And how many times have you seen Hands Up?
Oh, I don't know. A lot. I've told the actors that I could step in on occasion. And that might be a little bit awkward, but, you know, but I've seen it, you know, several times. And, you know, and I just, in transparency, I don't love the show. I mean, I go, and it's hard. It's hard for me to hear after 29, almost 30 years in law enforcement. It's hard for me to hear. And I don't necessarily agree with every monologue and everything that's said in every show. And Kevin's given me the freedom to understand that's okay. You know, we're not trying to reach that agreement, but that evolution, that evolving that's happening in me, it's changed my life.
And
Sorry.
And then just to sort of fast forward a little bit, we were then trying to figure out, well, how do we bring Hands Up to the Portland Police, right? And as we said at the time, Bob was head of the training division, and he said, I want to be able to bring this for our police to see. And so we were a little, all of us, I think, were a little naive at first, thinking that we could just say, hey, we're going to do this show, sign up and come see it. And what we realized at the Red Door was that we really needed to sort of, because like Bob said, our cops have been pretty beat up by the community who accuse them of all sorts of things. Like any group that gets lots of projections from the culture doesn't mean they don't deserve some of it, but they certainly don't deserve all of it. And so we said that we would go through, have you guys heard about the Citizens Academy? So you can go to the training division and they take you through a day in the life of the police. So we brought the Red Door and the cast, and we learned how to shoot a gun, and we learned how to use a taser, and we learned what it's like when you have to stop somebody on the street and the things that you have to face. And so we really thought, okay, let's step into their shoes, and maybe that will make more people more comfortable to come see Hands Up. So we did two shows of Hands Up at the training division, had amazing conversations for police only, and had some amazing conversations. And then at some point in the midst of all this, my linear brain is sort of fading how what the steps all are. We should probably figure that out so we tell the story right in the future. But at some point, we were talking, and like Bob said, he sort of gave the pushback of like, you know, there are some things about this that don't work. I don't feel like those Hands Up stories quite accurately reflect our truth. And Kevin was like, well, like, tell me your truth. Like, what are the stories of the police? And so at that point, Bob, I remember, said, ooh, that gives me goosebumps. That's very exciting. Like, we get to tell our story. And Kevin had a vision for this new show that we call Cop Out, and maybe you can speak to why you decided you wanted to tell the story of police. And Selena, how's our time? Okay, so like, be really concise.
Whoa, that's going to be really hard.
I know you can do it.
Okay, so yes, why? Why did I want to tell those stories?
Why did you?
Because stories are where it's at. That's where everything happens. I mean, every time I hear them speak, every time I hear a police officer tell their story, it humanizes them. And we had been one-sided for a year of telling just the side of the African-American experience. We had been facilitated over 60 conversations where facilitated a lot of anger, a lot of vitriol, a lot of rage, and realizing that, what are we doing? Are we just going to just foster and continue that anger, or are we going to balance it out? And I've come to realize that police officers have a huge story to tell that doesn't get told. And in hearing that story, it can change the minds of many people. It certainly changed my mind, and I say that it healed a lot of the fear and a lot of pain that I have had interviewing cops, riding along with them, listening to their stories, meeting them at 11 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, to have them tell me what's going on in their life, the complexity in those stories. They're human beings, and they do a very, very difficult job. And for me to be able to say that is a lot. So, and I felt like if I can be moved by that, then we as a people should be moved by that. And those stories need to be told ad infinitum.
Thank you. Yeah. So just to close up, we're obviously on a learning journey together, all of us. We are working on we've created a show which is a blend of the two shows that we're not going to be sort of showing to different criminal justice groups. We're going to be working with the DA's office. All the DA is going to see the show. We're working with the courts. And so please see us on a learning journey so we learn alongside with you audiences and your reactions. But I would love to just sort of get a snapshot, if both of you could talk about like kind of like the essence of how you're different now or what you've learned, that would be awesome.
Yeah, just, I mean, I'm committed to bringing this conversation, not just conversation understanding, but into action. You know, I love this profession and I'm very proud to be a police officer, but something's got to change. We got to do things differently. I've sat in a lot of diversity training over the years and a lot of efforts. I think we are on to a conversation here, and I've seen it already impacting officers' lives. I've seen people coming into my office asking questions, having dialogue, and reflecting on how we do business. I'm cautiously hopeful. For me personally, it's given me a freedom to be present. To sit now in these rooms, and I still sit in rooms where people are angry and mad, and I hear pain now. I don't hear it directed at, you know, Bob Day, the police officer who's responsible for every horrible thing the police have done in 400 years, which there are many things that we've done wrong. But what I do hear is the pain and the hurt, and then the responsibility that we have to minimize that and to get better and to learn. And so I feel like the term, it sounds corny to say it out loud, but I just feel freer. And I feel like my heart is bigger, you know, that's a win, you know, as far as I'm concerned. So I appreciate that.
Just real quick, your heart is bigger, Bob, and I mean, I will say that, you know, watching you go through your journey and being so real and authentic has had a huge impact on the power of relationship and trust. And, you know, for me, it's about the binary conversations that we seem to want to be in, where I'm right and you're wrong. And aren't you sick of that? I'm sick of that, you know. And yet we don't have a way out, right? So for me, just understanding and accepting that we can hold two ideas and conflicting ideas sometimes in the same brain, in the same world. And from that, that's where the evolve thing happens, is when we wrestle with those two truths. Because the truth is a black
community and the people of color community is just as true as the police or police officers' stories. And so what do we do with that? And I think that's a problem that we have to solve together. Because we got other problems that are much bigger that we have to come together to be able to fix. And if we're going to keep fighting about this petty crap, then we'll miss out on the opportunity to really change the things that are going to take us out.
Thank you, everybody.